Welcome to Asset Finance Connect's series of podcasts on the European asset finance industry. I'm Richard O'Donoghue, and over the next few months, I'll be chatting with industry experts about the challenges and opportunities facing our industry in 2025 and beyond. All this is possible with the sponsorship of Alpha. We'll tell you a bit more about Alpha later in the podcast. So it's a pleasure today to be joined by Carmen Aina, who's the CEO of BNP Paribas 3-Step IT. Carmen, welcome to the podcast.
Delighted to be with you, Richard, today.
So Carmen, we met at the Leaders event in Amsterdam in May, and one of the things we talked about was sustainability and circular economy. And you made a comment that resonated with me, which was that net zero is impossible without the circular economy. Now, I know BNP Paribas 3-Step IT talks about circular technology lifecycle management. Can you explain to our listeners what that means in practice?
Well, basically, this is our core business. This is what we do. And circular economy can apply to a range of many assets. We work on technology, and it's a model that it is designed to help businesses to manage their IT assets in a more sustainable way, in a more cost-effective way, and in a more efficient way. And we do that by leveraging the principles of circularity. And this is when we came together, you know, 3-Step IT in the Nordic, which is a company, private company specialized in these circular life cycle management services for the IT, with BNP Paribas, the leading bank of the Eurozone that a lot of customers and can help with the funding and can help us extend these services to more customers and more places in Europe.
And when you talk about, you know, the different stages, I presume you acquire the assets, you rent them, you refurbish them. Is that essentially what the model involves?
It comes in three steps. That's why we call ourselves 3 steps, you know. So the first one is the acquisition. And this is where we have help with the acquisition of the equipment. We find the right funder, and we can improve the financials of the acquisitions because we take risk on residual values. We know these IT assets very well. We know the value we can extract from them at the end, so we can provide interesting residual values. And then we manage these values through a digital workflow that it is proprietary. We created it. So we manage all these assets during the first period of life. At the end, we take the equipment back, we arrange logistics, everything, we bring it to our refurbishing centers. In the refurbishing centers, we repair them if necessary. We delete the information that it is on these devices in a safe, certified way, and we resell. And then one important, very important number, Richard, that I would like to convey and that I'm very proud of, we managed to resell 9 out of 10 assets that are returned to us. So I think this is super important in the framework of the circular economy. You don't just recycle, you try to give a second life. So that's what we are doing. We give second life to 9 out of 10 equipments that come back.
Wow. And maybe you expand on that a little bit more, because what happens? Where do the 9 out of 10 go? Do they go to different markets? Do they go to different countries? You know, how does that whole process work?
So look, to start with, I have to tell you that, and first I have to tell you that because I'm very proud of it. So we just opened a refurbishing center in France, which means that this is a second one that we have fully dedicated for the joint venture. So together with the 3 refurbishing centers that exist already in the Nordics, produce and refurbish about 1 million devices per year. Wow. Now, they are resold to our trading partners. So we have a network of trading partners that where we certify. The vast majority of these partners are in Europe. And by selling to these partners, this equipment can be made available to secondary users. So that's what we do. Now, I have to say, because I think this is very important to mention, until recently, we only resold to these partners. We did not resell directly the used equipment to end user, or for example, we didn't resold to consumer. However, there are things that are changing, you know. So there are countries, for example, if I take France, where already there are requirements for public tenders that part of the equipment that is acquired has to be used. Now, that was not a request of the market in the past, and that's what we were not doing yet. However, this is something that we are exploring and contemplating now, because we are actually quite happy with this kind of legislation coming up.
And do you see that? I mean, France is the country that people talk a lot about in public sector tenders, that the need for, you know, refurbished technology. Is that happening in other markets as well? Are you seeing that trend?
I think France is very keen on circular economy. They have a lot of initiatives. They have initiatives about repairability index, regulations about a plan obsolescence, just quite new. I think a couple of weeks ago, they issue a label. There will be a label for refurbished equipment. So it's not going to be only a second hand, but if it's certified second hand, it means it has to be very thoroughly checked. It means that all the information from the previous users needs to be very safely and completely erased. They have also regulations, for example, where they banned misleading terms or words. So, for example, they as new. So it has to be a clear distinction between secondhand, because it helps consumers to make more informed choices. You know, you buy a secondhand, but it's different, and you have more confidence when you buy a certified secondhand. So this is France, but we see this coming up in other countries as well. We see this in the Nordics. Probably what I see is more advanced in France, but it comes in the Nordics. It comes in the UK. So I think it's more and more. I see this also on the commercial sector. So this is why we are preparing for that.
And I think earlier you said as well that, you know, part of the reason for doing this is it's around sustainability, but you also mentioned it's got cost benefits. And I'm assuming that these assets, refurbished assets, are sold at a cheaper price than a new asset.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, you know, when I speak about our services, honestly, I don't speak about saving the planet. I speak about concrete things, you know. I speak about the financial advantages that it brings. I speak about the operational advantages. I speak about security, because we speak and we manage data, and that is very important in the present context. And of course, in the end, I speak a lot about the environmental benefits. You know, but the most important thing is, when you avoid the production of new, you know, there are companies that need the latest technology. There are other group of consumers, like students or nonprofit organizations or other type of consumers, that they don't need the latest type of technology. You know, the OEM, the hardware today, they produce, the refresh cycles are very short, you know, and with the rise of artificial intelligence and data and cloud, you know, they become even shorter. But there are these groups of customers that don't necessarily need the latest type of technology, and you make that available to them at a reasonable price. Absolutely.
And I think it's a great point about, you know, sustainability and the environmental benefits are a byproduct to some extent, that, you know, the message you're leading with is a financial message. So it's in people's or companies' interests to do this financially, but then they're also contributing to the environment. And it kind of leads me to maybe my final question on circular economy before we sort of move to another topic. I'm guessing then, when you position it that way, that your view is this is still a very live issue. It's still something that people are interested in, despite the fact that, you know, in the political world, world, sustainability, it's almost become a divisive issue. How do you feel about that?
You are hitting a very critical point here, Richard, especially that you mentioned how there is a lot of conversation, some contentions around sustainability these days. You might say that net zero and sustainability are out of fashion, but what I observe is that circularity is on the rise. So I'm very encouraged by that, and I'm very encouraged about what I see around. And again, like I was saying, when you speak about circularity, you speak about the customer, you focus on the customer, on the macroeconomic benefits of an effective circular economy. And this means financial advantage, operational advantage, security advantage, new jobs, and good for the planet. And let me tell you just a couple of numbers, because I think they are very important. Now, 85% of all the lifetime emission of an equipment comes in the production phase. Now, if we manage to prolong the life of an asset, it means that basically you reduce the need to produce new. Right. So this is already a huge benefit. And there are some numbers I want to share with you. It's an external research conducted by an independent, actually a market leading consultancy in France that work with us and on the services that we offer. And they discovered that by numbers, it's not a discovery, it's based calculation by numbers, that with the services we offer, we allow an average reduction of 17% CSG emissions of laptops in their first two cycle of lives compared to the market standard. And furthermore, it shows that our services help reduce ecological footprint of one laptop by 24% compared to the market standard. And let me explain what I mean by ecological footprint. It means the resources that you need to produce a laptop. So to give this example, to produce a laptop that weighs 1.5 kilograms, you need 500 kilograms resources. Now, these are groundbreaking numbers and research, you know, because there is very difficult to measure the effect of circularity. It's a new study. I can't talk more about this today, but we will publish it in a couple of months, and I will be happy to come back and maybe have a conversation and give you more details about that with clear, concrete numbers.
And as you know, this is an industry, or most of our listeners are going to be financial people, so they will respond well to concrete numbers.
Exactly.
And it is an amazing, sort of statistics that you've just thrown out there. And again, shows that, you know, we can have a strong economic discussion. We can have a discussion around operational benefits, security benefits, and help drive sustainability, lower emissions through the circular economy. So, you know, it's very encouraging that you don't feel that this has gone away as a topic, or that people are less interested in it. We're maybe just approaching the discussion
exactly
in a slightly different way. Yeah. And now a word about our sponsors, Alpha. Everyone knows driving sustainability is a business imperative, and having the right technology in place is key, not just to reducing your carbon footprint, but also in helping you take steps to address the wider process. The Alpha Systems platform offers solutions designed to support the circular economy in your asset finance operation. Comprehensive tools for end-to-end asset lifecycle management enable efficient second and third lives, extended product lifespans, and optimized refurbishment processes. Discover how Alpha can help you achieve your sustainability goals at alphasystems.com. So let me pivot from one sort of divisive topic, maybe not so divisive after some of your statistics, to one that is quite divisive in the world today. This is really about gender equality and diversity and inclusion. And I'd love to understand, you know, you've been in the technology industry for a long time. I'd love to understand your experiences in the industry as a woman and how that has changed over the years.
So I was in the IT industry most of my life. I spent 20 years in IBM. And then in IT services. And I can tell you, in the 90s, in business, I was most of the time the only woman in the room. And I can see a lot of progress. And people were not even talking a lot about it. You know, it was the status quo, and people were not worried that there are more women around them. Now, in my whole career, I see a lot of movements. I see a lot of initiatives from the public sector, from the commercial enterprises to encourage diversity and to encourage women in technology, to encourage women. You know, this is also a field that is perceived as a male field. There are less women that study sciences than men. And what is more important, even today in the recent years, more girls go into technical universities or in IT-related mm-hmm. fields. They still don't manage to progress on the ladder. So what I have seen is again, a lot of progress, but the feeling is always like you do one step forward, two steps back. I think in Europe, in BNP Paribas, Triste Paiti, we don't shy and we didn't step one inch back on diversity. And I can tell you, my COO is a woman, my chief commercial officer is a woman, and I pick them not because they are women, but just because they are the best. But you know, Richard, even the fact that you want to talk about women in technology is an issue. You don't want to talk about men in technology. So I think the moment where this question is not going to come, this is only the moment where we will not have an issue. But I tell you also one personal experience, because you are asking me that. Me, I was born in Romania in a communist period. In Romania, we were all equal. Both mm-hmm. men and women had to work. So honestly speaking, I came out in the Western world without figuring out that I should not be equal with any man as long as I bring value to the table. So I didn't have inhibitions. I started, funny enough, to have some inhibitions when I see what's happening around me in the Western world. I have to say, a lot of time, we as women, we don't have enough confidence, or we have the perception that we will not be trusted, especially in sciences or technical jobs. And my example is the following. When I left IBM, I got this chance to be interviewed in 3-Step IT. And I look at the company for the CEO job. And I look at the company and I look at the board, because I had to interview with the board. And the board were all male. The management was all male. I was at the breakfast table with my son. I said, look, I'm not going to go there. I mean, it's such a male-dominated company. Probably they're not going to trust me. And then again, funny enough, my son is telling, come, mom, I don't recognize you. You are the best. You know what you're doing. You know, just go and do it. And I went for it, you know, encouraged by my son. And these guys, I mean, the chairman at that time, he gave me full trust and he picked me. And I hope he's still happy with me, because I'm here for 10 years already. But what I mean to say, it's also sometimes we don't dare, you know, a part of still a lot of impediments and a lot of perceptions that still exist. I think probably we shy away because we believe there will not be enough trust in us.
And look, I'd love if we didn't have to talk about this. Your point is very valid. Why are we having the discussion? But my counterpoint would be, the fact that we're having the discussion is good, because otherwise men are blind to this, is the reality. And you know, the world just continues as it is. And at least having the discussion brings it into focus. But you said something really interesting, and I just want to pick up on this. You mentioned your son encouraged you. In general, how important is it to have, I don't want to call them male role models, but male supporters or advocates? Is that important to building a career as a woman in technology, do you think?
Richard, this is what built my career. I mean, to come here, I only have male bosses. I had only men that were mentoring me. I had men that trusted me. So you definitely need allies. You can't make it without that. You can't progress. You know, I have best mentoring and best role models. I look at them as role models. I didn't look at them as male versus women. But I think we need allies. Definitely, mm-hmm. we need more courage and we need more role models, because especially today, I look at some numbers before a couple of days ago, there are so few women in tech, less than 30%. And then if you look down to artificial intelligence, if you look to cloud and data, there are even less there.
Yeah.
And I think in AI, where, you know, there is a lot of automation, but it is so important to have a human directing this artificial intelligence in one way or the other, women can bring a lot of value. So I think, like you say, it's good that we talk now, because there is still a lot of work to be done. I was just saying that the end will be when we don't talk about it and it will be done. But there is still a long way to go.
Yeah. And actually, I hadn't really considered that point. And it's a fantastic point that, you know, the opportunity for many people in AI is going to be around human skills.
Communication,
exactly. Empathy. And again, I think it's sort of known that in general, women are stronger in those areas than men. So you're right. It actually creates a really interesting opportunity for women going into the industry to build careers in AI, which, to be truthful, is not something I had considered before. So you've given me a great insight today. I just want to touch on one last topic before I let you go. And again, it's kind of a more general one, but based on your experience. And it's around cultures. In a sense, I guess it's a diversity topic as well. But you know, you've brought together, or your joint venture is essentially a large French bank and a Finnish entrepreneurial company, I will say, for want of a better term. Bringing two cultures together, how challenging has that been? And what have you learned from doing it?
I get this question a lot, Richard, you know. And
I'm sorry, it's a boring question.
No. I think it's a very interesting and very, very good question, because this is basically still my work every day, you know, how you bring these cultures together. And I look at it, and most importantly, how do you bring the best of this culture together, you know? And you know, to make a little joke here, I look at it as a marriage, you know. Marriage is when a man and woman kind of become one. The trouble starts when they have to decide which one, you know. Honestly, if you look on the paper to what you just said, it doesn't seem like a very usual pairing, you know, on paper. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can't have more completely different culture. But I tell you what, for us, and during the negotiation, but most importantly, after we started, the most important thing is that we shared a North Star, the North Star we share, that the purpose, the scope that we share when we put this together was always clear and always consistent. And then we have the same ambitions and the same aim. We both recognize the value of the services we bring, the value of circular economy, and we wanted to bring the value and the power of circularity to life, and to do that for more customers, and to do that in more places. And since our competencies were absolutely complementary, we really believe that this time we can make a marriage under the stars, how I called it initially, you know, and then some cultural things started. But I think the most important thing, when you're really convinced, but convinced not on paper, not as a slogan, not because you're doing something that is fashionable, but because you do something in which you believe and which brings profit, jobs, good value for your customer, good values for your employees, and good value for the planet. Once you're very convinced, you can, you know, on a daily basis, try to overcome the usual, you know, different, you build bridges, basically. You build bridges and you try to diminish the gap and leverage on each other's strengths. It was an up and down, like in life. But I think I can speak now on both sides that the fact that the sharing of this vision and the pride we derive on both sides from that is keeping this joint venture going.
Well, I really can't end on a better note than a marriage under the stars. So I think that's the appropriate point to finish. And just look, thank you so much, Carmen, for sharing your insights. We covered a lot of different topics. And I think, you know, I really enjoyed the conversation and the honesty with with which you answered some of the questions as well. So thanks so much for sharing your insights with our listeners. And yeah, hopefully we will have you back maybe to talk more about the survey and the circular economy in the future. So thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Richard. And thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Asset Finance Connect, sponsored by Alpha. I found it interesting that Carmen focused on the economic and operational benefits of the BNP Paribas three-step IT business model, rather than simply focusing on the environmental benefits. In effect, the environmental benefit is a byproduct rather than the driver of the business model. I think this is a sensible approach as it makes the issue less divisive, even if we ultimately achieve the same outcome. If you've enjoyed this podcast, look out for future episodes in the coming weeks and keep sending us ideas for topics that we should cover in the future. Thanks for listening.